Hello, and welcome to episode 38 of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, Breaking Orbit, Part 1. At the end of the last episode, we took ourselves to the middle of 1972 and plotted out the next 3 years of one person's story, specifically Milan Miljanic. We've yet to travel to club football outside of Yugoslavia much prior to this point, but over this and the next episode, we'll take in 2 seasons of Yugoslav football, including a season of international football, and then a bit of Spanish football to round it off, as the decade itself pivots on Miljanic's actions over this period. In these 3 years, Zvezda will win their penultimate title of the decade, change English football, and see their own era of dominance come to a close. So first of all, let's go through the 1972-73 Yugoslav domestic season. This would be a season dominated by attack and, specifically, by the 3 main strikers of the top 3. Much as Hajduk had the prior season, Siljesnikar fell away quickly due to defensive weakness. They conceded double the goals in this season as in their title-winning season. Hajduk themselves in this season, their only season managed by Branko Cvijan, were even less competitive than Zelje, falling to 9th. Dinamo would be the best of the Croatian sides, but even then, only one place ahead of their split rivals. Instead, the challenge to Zvezda would come from Bosnia and Belgrade. The Belgrade side were, however, not Partizan, but OFK and the goals of Slobodan Sandrac, who fired 25 of OFK's 52 goals that season, while the other challengers for the title, Velez Mostar, had Dusan Bajevic supply 21 of their 48 goals. However, these individual feats were not enough to lay much of a glove on Zvezda, who had Vojin Lazarevic supply 25 of their 71 goals, the most goals scored by a team for 5 seasons, as they won the title by 6 clear points. Velez, however, had hung on with them most of the way, dropping only in the last month of the season courtesy of away defeats in Belgrade to both OFK and Partizan in successive weeks. Spartak Subotica and Sucheska would be relegated to be replaced by Proletar Zrenjanin and NK Zagreb. This would be the last season of the second league being in multiple zones. It would revert to the old East-West league structure of much of the 60s, and this regionalisation would remain all the way until 1988. Before further reform. Zvezda and OFK would also be Yugoslavia's prime representatives in the UEFA Cup that season, after Vojvodina were battered 8-1 by Slovan Bratislava in the first round. Zvezda would manage a 7-4 win over Lausanne, with OFK getting a 3-5 win over Dukla Prague in the first round. Both would then get big Western opposition in the second round, Zvezda with Valencia, and OFK with Feyenoord. While it would take away goals to put the Romanticari through, after a wild away leg that would finish 4-3, Zvezda would dispatch Valencia with relative ease, a 4-1 aggregate win taking them to the third round. In that last 16, Zvezda would face Spurs, who had disposed of OFK a decade prior on their way to Fairs Cup history, while OFK would be paired with a team we've met a few times in the Balkans Cup, Bero Stara Zagora of Bulgaria. Spurs would prove too much for Zvezda, but OFK would reach the quarters and their second tie against Dutch opposition that season, this time FC Twente. This fine FC Twente side of the era were a step too far, with a 4-3 aggregate loss doing for OFK, and Twente would become somewhat of a bogey team for Yugoslav sides over the next couple of years. Siljesnikar's trial in the European Cup was chastening. Given a difficult draw against English champions Derby in the first round, they went down 4-1 on aggregate, losing both legs. Hajduk's time in the Cup Winners' Cup was more fruitful. The competition itself ran without reigning champions Rangers, after crowd trouble after the final of the prior season saw them banned from Europe. Hajduk would begin against Norway's Fredrikstad, thanks to Nedovesa scoring once in each leg to score a 2-0 win and qualification. They would be given a harder time in the second round by a surprising source. Welsh team Wrexham of English Division 3, who won the leg in Wales 3-1, helped by a Muzinich own goal, before Nadavesa bailed the side out at Starry Patch to put them through, but only via away goals. The reward was a quarter-final against Hibs. Alan Gordon scored a hat-trick at Easter Road to win the first leg 4-2, with Hlevniak scoring a double for Hajduk. The game would be turned round at Starry Patch, a 3-0 Hajduk win taking them to a semi-final against their third British side. Having done for Wales and Scotland, it was time for England, and a side with some recent history against Croatian teams. Leeds United. Leeds had done their homework, perhaps more so than against Dinamo in their first cup final that way back when, as they had gone to see both the Wrexham and the Hibs games in person. Hajduk also entered the tie in dire form, but Leeds managed only a 1-0 win at home through Alan Clark, who was also sent off on the day for kicking out after a challenge. Leeds would then go to the away leg carrying injury doubts and perhaps mental blocks. Forward Terry Yorath boarded the flight while his daughter, the now famed broadcaster in the UK Gabby Logan, was being born. Leeds, perhaps unsurprisingly, parked the bus. Don Revie would go on to describe the performance that night as Leeds' best ever in Europe, as they were under the cosh for 90 minutes yet escaped with a 0-0 draw and a 1-0 aggregate lead. Leeds would fall in the final to AC Milan, while Hajduk fell in the semis, primarily due to their own lack of cutting edge. The British press accusing them of being an excellent team, but one that always took one pass too many. In many ways, the season that followed that would be very similar to that of 8 years prior, the last season of Partizan's Babies, in its symbolic ending of an era. But there was something to touch upon first. The Cup. You'll note for the previous season we didn't mention the Cup at all. And, as we know, the Cup itself was built around ending on Youth Day in May, which was Tito's official birthday but wasn't his actual birthday because he was like the Queen and had two of them. But the Cup itself skipped the date in 1973 to move to a new schedule built around the final being on Republic Day in the 29th of November, moving back to what had been its schedule when it was first created. It would, however, only do this for 2 years, 73 and 74. The 1973 edition would also show another cup rule we've not yet explored. As we know, the final was traditionally held in Belgrade. However, a rule change had been instituted a couple of years prior but meant that if the final included one Belgrade club, then the final would shift to a two-legged tie to ensure that it wasn't unfairly tipped in the favour of the Belgrade side. Yet the 1973 edition would be won by Hajduk over Sfinna Zvezda after only drawing at Starry Patch but then winning the second leg at the Maracanã. This two-year calendar experiment would be amended primarily for economic reasons. Attendance at these autumn finals was only around a third of that of the summer finals. When it came to the league season itself, Zvezda's fall-off in Maljanic's final season at the club wasn't as dramatic as Partizan's last season of the Babies, yet it still marked an important shift in Yugoslav football. Where Partizan's fall opened up a democratisation of Yugoslav football with the title wins for Vojvodina and Sarajevo, Zvezda's was mainly for them to move aside to allow Hajduk to take over. Unlike in the mid-1960s, there was another dynasty ready to take over the head of Yugoslav football that would, over the next three seasons, dominate proceedings right up to perhaps the most controversial end to a title race there has ever been. But that particular concluding event is a little way off at this point. Instead, it was time for the 73-74 league season, and yet another ridiculously tight title race that would, eventually, be decided only on the final day of the season. Hajduk, with Stabec having left, were now led by Tomislav Ivic, and while he will get a far more chat of his own, it's worth just mentioning what made him tick at this point. Ivic was a disciple of Baba Luka Kalatina, and much like the legendary Hajduk boss Kalatina, there was a repetition to training to drill in routine until it became second nature. The most basic part of this was in defensive positioning. Where Hajduk conceded 50 goals in 72-73, they would concede only 24 the following year. With that sort of record, Ivic has sometimes been considered a purely defensive manager. But that would be an unfair accusation. Defence was simply the first thing sorted, and then attacking phases evolved upon that solid base. It stands in stark contrast to Miljan Miljanic, who would adjust to the task at hand. Ivic would build a less flexible but more consistent tactical approach. It made a serious difference in what was a three-team title race of sides that were of varying skills. Hajduk were the same side as they had been the season before, but better organised and drilled to the point of collapse. Velez were the same side as before, built on their homegrown star talent still coming through into the peak of their careers. And finally, there was Zvezda, incredibly potent, but also highly porous. Only one side in the league would concede more than them. And it would be yet another tale of Europe taking the energy out of a Yugoslav side trying to defend their title. Zvezda's challenge this season would last until the 1st of May and a trip to Stary Plach. To that point, Zvezda would be almost level with Hajduk, but a 4-1 thrashing handed out by the home side, helped by a double from Slavisa Žungul, knocked them out of contention, as Velez and Hajduk both entered the season on hot streaks. In the following round, Zalesnikar managed to hold Hajduk to a draw to put Velez and Hajduk level on points with two games to go. In the penultimate week, Hajduk would beat Borac Banja Luka 4-1 with Velez mastering Celik 2-0. Both sides had two goal wins on the final day to mean that the title would go to Hajduk on goal difference, in spite of Velez having had the better record of the two sides head-to-head. At the bottom, Borac Banja Luka would be relegated in spite of a goal difference of 0, 1 point behind Bor, who had a 6-4 win that bluntly looks a bit weird to this day, over Zalesnikar on the final day to keep them safe. Encre Zagreb fell out of the division also, but in far less controversial circumstances. In Europe, we'll leave Sveta Zvezda's time in the European Cup till last this episode, but to be fair, there wasn't that much to write home about elsewhere anyway. In the Cup Winners' Cup, Dinamo had the misfortune to draw eventual runners-up AC Milan, and obviously the holders, in the first round, and predictably the Rossoneri ran out fairly easy winners 4-1 on aggregate. In the UEFA Cup, Velez fell out in the first round also, losing 5-3 on aggregate to Czech's Tatran Prešov. OFK would require away goals to get beyond Panathinaikos, but would then get absolutely hammered by Dinamo Tbilisi 8-1 in the second round. This right here would be the start of a slow decline for the Romanticari, who wouldn't play in Europe for almost 30 years, and even then, it would be the Intertoto Cup. This was the first year of there being only two sides in the UEFA Cup from Yugoslavia, due to the changes we mentioned a few episodes ago in representation. And it was not a year in which they did themselves many favours in terms of their showing. All of this leaves Sveta Zvezda's European Cup campaign. In a way, it's a campaign that isn't actually worth talking about all that much. Zvezda only reached the quarterfinals and would go out there uncontroversially. On the other hand, the ramifications it would have for one of the sides they met on the way there would define the following decade of European football. Of course, we're not talking about their first round opponents, Stal Mielec of Poland, who were just beginning their own decade of domestic prominence, but would be beaten easily enough by Zvezda. The team in question would be Sveta Zvezda's second round opponents, Liverpool. Liverpool were not just English champions, but they'd also picked up the UEFA Cup the previous year. They were a very good side, but a very English one, and Zvezda would simply outclass them through Miljanic's pragmatic possession football. Knowing how Liverpool wanted to play, Zvezda were well prepared, playing 4-4-2 but adapting from the lessons of Ajax's total football, with a focus if not on the totality, but on options football. Short passes, running and making sure there were always options available to retain possession and create space. Liverpool played a 4-2-4 and simply couldn't cope with Zvezda, falling 2-0 down quickly in the first leg. Bob Shankly stated, "They are a good side, though our fans would not pay to watch the football they play." An accusation that stuck to Miljanic throughout his career, given his pragmatic outlook. Liverpool looked for longer balls, direct play and swift transitions, but simply never saw enough of the ball and never unsettled Zvezda enough to actually make that play work. When it came to Anfield, Vojin Lazarevic would take the lead and Liverpool would press harder. The intensity of Liverpool's play earned them a goal, but Zvezda would kill the tie-off in the 89th minute with a second away goal to secure a 4-2 win on aggregate. They hadn't even needed Ziyech to do the job. Shankly would be gone the following summer, but Shankly and the boot room team launched an inquest straight after the game into why they lost. The result was moving to a style similar to that of Miljanic, as seen as the only way to get success in Europe at the highest level, with the most immediate changes being moving players who were considered better in possession to the centre of defence in Phil Thompson and Emlyn Hughes. It would take a little while, but the result of that was a decade of dominance that yielded multiple European Cups for the side that would only end with Heysel. The football that Liverpool fans wouldn't pay to watch, according to Shankly, had been applauded off the second leg. It would soon be applauded many more times in the future. Zvezda would be knocked out in the next round 2-0, by perhaps the most infamously cynical and violent side ever to reach a European Cup final, being the 1974 vintage of Atletico Madrid. And anyone listening through the lens of knowing how Yugoslav teams fared in Spain will perhaps be able to guess how Zvezda were eliminated. In Madrid, Zvezda would suffer one of the most atrocious offside calls you will ever see to prevent them from a comeback in the second leg. Miljanic would leave the club in the summer for a bumper contract with Real Madrid. While he may not have taken Zvezda to the European heights Partizan had reached at the end of their own era, he arguably left a far greater impact on the European game as a whole than did the flash-in-the-pan success of the babies on that stage. But that European Cup run wasn't all for Miljanic's time in Yugoslavia, because next time on the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, we take a look at what Miljanic did in the summer of 1974, because before he joined Real Madrid, there was some other business he had to attend to in West Germany. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you next time.